It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, you have no idea. We were just minutes away from actually pursuing an internet video trend on this podcast. We almost obliquely participated in a particular branded food challenge.
We did.
But then I decided I couldn't wait till 2 o'clock to have lunch. So as you may or may not remember, one of my current obsessions, as I always seem to have one, is the Try Guys. I've been watching a whole bunch of the Try Guys, who are just four dudes. They used to be at BuzzFeed, who just try things that they've never tried before and are charming and meme worthy doing it. So I'm going through the back catalog stuff during the height of quarantine. They did one where they did a spicy ramen challenge, and they had all these ramens that they would make, and there were like 10 different steps getting spicier and spicier. And they did eventually get crazy, but some of the early ones didn't seem that spicy and sound kind of tasty. And I remembered them because they had a very distinct package. They had this sort of really weird stylized rooster occasionally breathing fire. Very weird. But anyway, cut to December. I'm in Asia Plus buying stuff, both for my niece as a Christmas present and for the New Year's supply of things. And I see this brand of ramen. And I was like, oh, I should try that out because I saw it in that video. So I grab the regular version. I didn't get the double spicy or anything because it's good, but the regular, still spicy. And the one with cheese, which even I would not have gone near because I'm like, spicy Korean ramen with cheese. But in the video, they had it and they were like, it surprisingly is really good. So I got it. And as I'm checking out, the cashier is like, have you had these before? And I said, no, I saw an internet video where people ate them. And they looked really good, although I know they're spicy. She's like, okay, they're very spicy. So, okay. So I took them home. I have since found out the Try Guys were just doing whatever. Like, apparently this brand of ramen is, or most likely was, a thing on the internet for a while. And people would try it in videos and stuff like that. It's called, the brand is Bulldock or something. Buldak. And like I said, it has a very distinctive mascot on it. And I have eaten a few now. I've tried both kinds or whatever, and I decided to have some today. It is very spicy. It is spicy enough that I generally have to stop eating for a while because my whole face hurts. And I need to have some yogurt or maybe some tortillas or something like that. But I always come back. And I make it again because it is stupid spicy, but it's still really tasty. Like, I really like the flavor of it, even though I have to pause in the middle and be like, okay, now I'm in pain. I'm going to wait for a while for the pain to subside. And I can't figure out what to do. And the funny thing is they're the same thing. I tried the normal one, and you have the noodles, and you have the sauce, and there's a very spicy sauce. And then you have flake, which I think just is some like sesame seeds and stuff like that on it. I thought there were chili peppers in the flake, but when I looked this time, there wasn't. The with cheese one is the exact same pasta with the exact same sauce and then just powdered cheese instead of the flake stuff. So the spicy level is essentially the same. But yeah, this is the first time I've had a food where I'm like, I can't eat it in one go because it's too hot and it hurts me, but I still really like it. So we'll see how that continues. There's a lot of other flavors. I might have to check some out. Now, probably not going for the double spicy, but.
Okay.
It's pretty good. I love an Asian grocery store. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world to actually do this thing with spicy ramen. Maybe you've heard of it. I don't know, but we're the only ones doing it. So enjoy that. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 564.
564. And this is our first episode in our 12th calendar year, even though we are still technically in our 11th recording year. So it is a meaningless milestone, which I want to bring up because what else have we got going on? Yeah.
Your birthday's coming up, though. Your birthday is...
My birthday is coming up.
Isn't your birthday always exactly 4 weeks after Christmas? Is that how it works?
Maybe. 25 and 21.
Right, but I mean, like, it's on the same weekday, like, exactly 4 weeks, I think.
No, that's what I'm saying. Based on those numbers, we should know for sure. We should be able to say exactly how many days that is.
Yeah, so your birthday's 2 weeks from tomorrow. 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right. Which means Friday, not Saturday.
Yeah, sorry. You're exactly 4 weeks from Christmas Eve every year. Exactly 4 weeks from Christmas Eve every year.
You'd think I would have figured that out in what will soon be 45 of these bullshitters, but no.
I mean, I think I knew that somehow, that you were exactly 4 weeks from Christmas something. It's Christmas Eve, not Christmas Day.
Birthdays are weird. That's all I have to say. No, like, there's nothing. Yes, there are certain birth trends you can follow, but in general, there's not a lot out there. So birthdays are all over the place. We've got a whole bunch of confirmation bias because just weird things where you find out you have the same birthday as somebody, or like the fact that my wife's youngest sister was born the day after me. Somehow that to me, I'm like, wow, what are the odds? But then the odds are actually not what you think, because there's what's called the birthday paradox, which is if you get more than, it's somewhere between 30 and 50 people in a room together, you're mathematically guaranteed two of them are going to have share a birthday. And I don't remember why.
Well, it's a smaller number than you think it would be.
Yes. The point. It's way less than 365.
Yeah, right.
And, yep. And I'm pretty sure it's under 100. And yeah. It's like, for 1 second, many years ago, I thought I really understood the Monty Hall paradox. Like, for one shining second, I thought I got it, and then it was gone. The birthday one, I have never remotely been even close. I've looked at the Wikipedia and all that. I have never been anywhere near how that works. So, yeah, birthdays are weird. For those of you just joining the show, we have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address. The Magical Talking Hat at gmail.com. Say it. Remember it. Email it. Because everybody who's anybody writes into that email address. The Magical Talking Hat at gmail.com. Getting real aggressive this time. I'm going to see how that.
Sure.
And they write in with whatever they want. Nobody's even concerned about that. There are no standards and practices we're adhering to anywhere at all. Fuck your rules. We are punk. So you just email whatever. The hat, however, does a great deal of sorting and cutting and forwards us whatever it fucking feels like. And then we read it on the air, and except when we don't. That's how this is. And we haven't done this since 2021. So.
Yeah.
I can remember where all the pieces go.
Clear last year.
I don't fully understand why I don't get sick of that joke. But I never have in my entire life. I mean, maybe it's the only once a year thing. I think a big part of it is most everyone else seems to be sick of it. And that always revs it up for me. But like every year I do that joke constantly and everybody's rolling their eyes. And I'm like, I'm never tired of that joke. I don't get it. It's one of those, it's not a good joke. I freely admit it's not a good joke. It's not a new joke.
It's a dad joke.
Yeah, it's one of the daddest, I would say.
I would say so too.
Like,
yeah.
The only reason it's not the top spot is I think the bylaws say it has to be a pun to take the top spot. Like, it's an old, way to keep the classes separate.
Right.
So it still technically says the top dad joke must always be a pun.
I think you're right about that.
There's work to, you know, amend it and all that, but they haven't gotten there yet. But it's number two. It's solidly number two. I love it. I don't want to go every year. I love reintroducing people to it.
Oh, sure.
Because it's not as common anymore because everyone else has, moved on. Who's alive today, even the little children.
Yeah,
at age four, they're like, yeah, I remember that when I was three, it was good. What do you got now? So it's incredibly common that I am saying it to a person for the first time that year. And I love seeing the whole deal on their face as they like remember it and like almost laugh, but it turns into a groan, but it's all inside because they're trying to be polite. And then that moment when a little bit of light is snuffed out as they realize they're going to hear this joke constantly this week or whenever it comes around. And that's when I just get the giggles. So how's your week been? There was some New Year's in it. Other things probably.
We watched, actually, this would be the second week we watched it, the Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's a little weird. You know, they're really... Okay, so Boba Fett. When you hear the name Boba Fett or you think of Boba Fett, you think of a bad guy, right? Or what do you think of?
I personally... always think of Kirk Cameron and I don't know why. No. He takes off the helmet and it's Kirk Cameron under there. No, I personally always think of the moment in Jedi where his jetpack goes off and he falls into the Sarlacc pit and dies because I think that sums up Boba Fett so well.
I kind of do too. Plus, don't they do that famous scream for him when he goes in or something? Or someone?
I think R2's scream is happening at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Or something. But there is something weird with the scream. Yeah, like it's because again, Boba Fett was fucking nothing in the original trilogy. Absolutely fucking nothing. They were like, here's this cool outfit in Empire, and then nothing in and then that one shot in Jedi, like, so nothing. But he is important because he actually got introduced and was an interesting character in the animated section of the holiday special, which has been in and out of canon several times, but it was a thing that existed before Empire existed that did matter. And of course, after the fact, people have made him a whole fucking thing.
But I mean, didn't they use...
And that's fine, and enjoy it, but...
You know the Wilhelm scream. Didn't they use the Wilhelm scream when he died?
I knew that was what you were talking about. I don't remember the Wilhelm scream then, but it's possible. It definitely comes up at least once in Jedi. It's possible.
I was just going to look it up because that's what we do now.
No!
Never mind. I'm not going to. But anyway.
But I think of him. He was a bad guy, though.
He worked for the space Nazis. He was technically
a bounty hunter, which means he could be anything from a full-on bad guy to a rebellious anti-hero.
I know, but when you work for the space Nazis, that pretty much forfeits the anti-hero, doesn't it?
He's just a Hessian mercenary. He doesn't actually care whose colonies they are. He just cares who pays him.
I know, but Nazis are like, as soon as someone works for anything Nazi, that's it. You're done. Isn't that right?
But look how many jobs were created under the Empire's rule.
I'm just saying there's a point where someone like a bounty hunter or even a smuggler is beyond redemption when they work with just the wrong people or do just the wrong thing. And it seemed like, I mean, that's part of the reason why they killed him. It seems like he was irredeemable. But then he came back.
What do you mean irredeemable? He did jack shit. He seemed like he was a placeholder for someone else to come in there.
All right. The reason I'm talking about this is because in this show, he's
the protagonist.
Well, not just that, but they work really hard to sort of rehabilitate him, to make him not even really an anti-hero, but like a good guy, more or less.
Yeah.
And for me, again, to me, even though he was a bounty hunter, like you said, bounty hunters can be anti-heroes, because he worked with the Empire and because he worked for space mafia or whatever, he was unambiguously bad as far as I was concerned when I was watching the movies when I was younger. And then in the prequels, that didn't make him look better. You know, even though he was a kid in the prequels, but his dad didn't seem like, that wasn't really his dad. He treated him like a dad.
Yes, technically he was a fucked up clone of that man.
Yeah, a twin brother, really. But but anyhow, Django didn't seem like a good guy at all. And then, because he watched Django be killed in a brutal way by the Jedi, it seemed like that was going to explain why Boba Fett was not a good guy. I mean, maybe you could feel a little more sorry for him because of that experience, but still, a bad guy. I mean, nothing really indicated that this was someone who was going to be a character that you could admire or whatever. I mean, if you liked the character, that was fine, but it would be like liking Darth Vader. You don't like Darth Vader because he's an anti-hero. You acknowledge Darth Vader's bad, but you like him anyway. Same thing with Boba Fett, it would seem. But in this show, they're really trying to rehabilitate him. Like, it almost is distracting to the story to see how hard they're working to do it. But the second episode was actually pretty good, so we'll probably keep watching it.
I can't tell if this is the issue here is welcome to the Disneyfication of everything. Right. They'll make whoever you like best. I guarantee you we're only a few years away from a more sympathetic portrayal of Darth Vader in something. I know the prequels were sort of supposed to be that, but let's be real. Or if this is just welcome to old school Star Wars that ignores a lot of contextual morality at any given moment and can make people have change of hearts in either direction because your morality is based entirely on the very last thing you did. So honestly, I can't tell if this is, sorry, your Star Wars is dead, this is the modern version, or if it's like, yeah, sorry, you're interested in good cinema, this is how Star Wars does it and always has. So I don't know if this is too much change or too little change, but it's one of those things.
Well, one of the things they're doing in the...
I am unsurprised in either of it.
No, I... Right, right. Although it's you know, you and I both are interested in ethics and morality and things. And because we're interested in these things, we like fairly sophisticated portrayals. And to us, what sophisticated means is not clear cut, right? It's like there are dilemmas. There are choices people make that don't fall neatly into one side or the other. And so when we see people trying to make things seem black and white, and not in a narrative way, like, well, this person's seeing it black and white, and it's not, it's more complex than that. But the producers and the storytellers are making it seem black and white. It's not compelling to us. And that's...
Sometimes it's downright hilarious.
Yeah. But this is kind of interesting because it takes place on Tatooine, which I don't know why Star Wars keeps going back to the most boring planet that Star Wars has ever created, but they do.
Jakku was more boring than Tatooine, but then I thought about it. I'm like, no, it wasn't. It had all that cool rubble and it had weird trading for bread and shit. Yeah, no, I love that.
Trading for bread. I mean, weird. John Favreau so far has written and directed both of these episodes, leans heavy into the space Western motif, which I love. So I like that. And one thing that Tatooine gives you, if you're going to do a space Western, is it kind of gives it that Southwest United States flavor. So it's like, okay, I see how that works. Still boring. Still.
Now I'm just picturing a Rancor with one of those turquoise bandanas around its neck. And some chunky jewelry.
Yeah. But see, that kind of speaks a little bit to the another point is they could be on an Earth-like planet and still have a part of the planet that looks like that. You don't have to have the whole planet be a desert, you know, whatever. Anyway.
And just in the background somewhere is the RV from Breaking Bad.
So... The space Western aspects of it are really cool and really fun. And another thing they're doing is, on Tatooine, the Tuscans and Sand People are the indigenous people of the planet.
Yeah.
This has been true even since the very first film. And this is something about the Tusken Raiders that I didn't really consider until sometime 10 years ago. I was reading a synopsis of a story that I wasn't going to read, but I was interested in what the story had to say or whatever. And it was set on Tatooine and it said something about the Tusken Raiders. The story was not about the Tusken Raiders or anything like that. But for some reason, me reading that synopsis made me think, oh, hey, the Tusken Raiders are the indigenous people of this planet. How interesting would it be if a Star Wars story told their story, explained why they raid settlements and things like that? You know, give us an idea of what their situation is, because up till that point, the only thing I knew about Tusken Raiders were they were xenophobic savages and everything like that. A very colonial.
And they ride in single file to disguise their numbers. Given the history of everything, it's possible Obi-Wan was full of shit about that, and it was only true from a certain point of view. I just yesterday, we were talking about Star Wars yesterday, me and other people, and I just realized for the first time that Ewan McGregor is straight up doing an Alec Guinness impression in every movie. That's weird to me in retrospect. I'm like, he's not playing Obi-Wan. He's doing an impression of Alec Guinness. I feel like maybe Alec Guinness's ghost should be mad about that.
Anyway,
all know he famously didn't like, was sad that he had been in that movie.
I didn't know if anybody had done any kind of exploration of, you know, had told a story like that about the
KOTOR. KOTOR did a teeny bit. KOTOR had a quest where you had to deal with the Tuskens, and for me, that was the first time I was like, oh shit, they got their whole deal, and they're just living their culture, and it's just butting heads against.
Right, right.
What everybody else has decided it is.
Huh. See, Abby played Knights of the Old Republic, and I don't remember that. Maybe she didn't do
that. I mean, it wasn't that exciting. It was like there was just a section where yeah, something where like the local town has Tusken Raiders and they kidnapped their daughter. Then it's like, well, that's because they killed 8,000 of our people next door. Like, okay, well, the light side of me says I'll kill a few of you and then you'll give the daughter back. Whereas the dark side, I'll just make you give the daughter back and nobody will die. This is the thing we're talking about. The light side of the Force cannot use lightning. It's inherently evil. But they can totally brainwash somebody and mind control them on the street, in a bar, with concepts as vague as you want to rethink your life.
Your life, yeah, right. Well, the second episode of Boba Fett gives us some insight into the Tusken Raiders that's really kind of interesting. I looked up some things to see, has anyone ever done this before? Because again, like 10 years ago, it occurred to me, and obviously a lot earlier it occurred to you, but I couldn't find any evidence that anyone had really, aside from what you just said, had anyone had really done that. And I think that's kind of interesting that it's taken this long. And I thought it was actually done pretty well. I mean, Jon Favreau actually did a pretty good job with it, I thought. So, I mean, Boba Fett still does not impress. The guy who plays Boba Fett is pretty cool and I like watching him. He's a good actor and everything. But the character of Boba Fett himself and their like you said, Disney-fied efforts to rehabilitate him and turn him into a good guy.
Or like, possibly their old school Star Wars efforts.
Yeah, I suppose.
Depending on which one we're talking about.
You're right. I mean, George Lucas sold it to Disney for a reason because he was always in that Disney mindset himself, really. So
yeah, I mean, Boba Fett would have gone nowhere if the popularity had been. Like, you can't tell me for a second it was always meant to have all this other shit. No, everybody was like, that dude looks cool. We want him and his outfit.
But see, then they created a lot more interesting culture and stuff behind the Mandalorians, which I've explained before that I started to really appreciate. But none of that had anything to do with Boba Fett or Jango Fett.
No.
In fact, when he showed up in the Mandalorian TV show, he made an issue out of I'm not a Mandalorian or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like there were a lot of people who were fans of the Mandalorians and that culture that had been created in books and games and cartoons and stuff that didn't even care about Boba Fett and Jango Fett. But now I think they want
was all Boba about that Beskar.
Yeah, now they want Boba Fett to be kind of part of the whole Mandalorian thing, which is fine. That's fine. That's all right. But it's, you know, I don't care. But I am watching it. I mean, and I'll keep watching it probably. So because
Jon Favreau, so you know.
Oh yeah, she's awesome. And like I said, the guy who plays Boba Fett is great. I like watching him. He's very good actor. And it's a space Western and it's fun that way. So, I mean, that's the thing about Disney is you can be really critical of them for a lot of valid reasons, but you still end up watching their stuff.
Well, and that's basically what I've heard is if you like Mandalorian, you probably like this.
Yeah, and, that's true.
I mean, this doesn't have a Baby Yoda, so I'm a little pissed, but you know. I'm sure we'll watch it. We're currently watching Hawkeye.
Yeah, we watched that. It was okay. I mean, we just like Haley Steinfeld. So that and
I do too. And I'm not liking her in this, which is my problem.
Oh, well,
they're going vaguely adorkable with her in a way that I'm just.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't. I think direction is an issue here. Because this isn't what I'm used to from her, but not that I've seen her in a lot, but I do like her. We are two episodes in. I think we both can't come up with reasons to give a shit about any of it enough to even stop watching. Or could, like, we're still watching because it's like, okay, I mean, there's colors here, but I don't care. I also don't understand, and I'm just gonna throw this out here. I mean, I guess it's technically a spoiler. It is not, because I'm gonna throw out an unanswerable question. Regardless of how it ends up in the story, we're only two episodes in. What am I supposed to do with the mom's boyfriend? I do not. Are we all in on the joke? Like, it's he's supposed to be comedically over the top, right?
I think so, yeah.
Or is, because I feel like when the story ends, the result will have been serious. But the whole time, I'm like, this is very, very close to just like wearing sandwich boards that tell your motivation and the secrets of your character. Because I'm like, this is like somebody saw season two of Stranger Things and saw Bob and was like, yeah, having a guy you're suspicious of for an entire season and then having the result be he was just a dude, like, seems fun, but what if we just dispense with any subtlety? And just every episode came out and was like, hey, this guy, huh? You don't know, but like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be laughing or I'm supposed to be worried. I'm just bemused. I'm just incredibly bemused by the boyfriend. He looks like, in an earlier decade, I know he would have been the clown of the show. In an earlier decade, the moment I saw him, I know he would have been like pranked and like buckets of things would have fallen on his head and shit like that. He's just such a weird caricature. I don't like it. Don't like him. I'm also not sure Haley Steinfeld and Jeremy Renner have much chemistry. At least
they don't.
So
no,
far.
They don't. No.
And that doesn't get better. That's a disappointment. Yeah. I do happen to know at least one other interesting character will be coming in, and that will probably create a different dynamic, which will be fun. But yeah. We did start season two of Ted Lasso last night.
Oh, how'd that
weird. Well, so Trish is scared of season two of Ted Lasso, because she knows what an impact it had on and so I tell her, I'm like, don't worry, that sort of doesn't kick in for a while. It's pretty okay to begin with. Two separate times I said this, and each time afterwards in my brain I'm like, oh shit, that first episode kind of has a big deal in it, and it's not something I want to minimize. But it also isn't like a major plot point for the season. So I probably shouldn't have said everything's fine to begin with. But I also don't want to go back and be like, okay, something really fucked up will happen, but we won't spend a lot of time on, because like that'll just ruin the experience in a different way. And so, like I said, I did it once. And then a few days later when we were going to watch it, I said it again. I had the same thought, the same thing. And we just watched it. And afterwards, I just say, I'm sorry. I feel like I should not have relaxed you to that degree, knowing what was coming. But in terms of the impact I've been talking about, this is unrelated and it won't really be a thing again. So there's your spoiler-free explanation. But William knows what I'm talking about.
I think I do, yeah.
But it is fun knowing the arc of the season. It's that thing again of right from the beginning, I could see shit I couldn't see before. That's very interesting. Subtleties of character and stuff. So that's cool. But mostly I just like watching them all over again. And it gets bad now. We're in a scene and I had to stop myself from turning to Trish and be like, Roy's going to say some stuff that you're going to think is really cool in a minute. But like, I knew that was happening because he had a real good little monologue and Trish loves Roy. Like I love Roy. And I was like immediately, but I was just like, no, you don't need to be the 10-year-old who hasn't learned the bit yet that you don't say what's about to happen right before it happens. And it did happen and she really liked it.
Yeah.
So that's good. Playing a lot of Diablo 3. Still don't know why.
Is Trish playing with you or you're just playing?
Nope, just me. Oh. Playing a necromancer through act three already. It's weird. It's very, I think it, I'm very push the button, get a peanut thing. Like, I think it's making me feel I've accomplished things. So that's weird. How was your New Year's? Did you do anything for New Year's?
I mean, we didn't go anywhere, anything like that. We, I mean, we sometimes try to, like, I mentioned this before, we try to, like, watch a set of films that are either themed or go together. It's a, either it's a trilogy in it, in and of itself, like say the Nolan Batmans or something.
I believe it's pronounced Batman.
Or they're related by theme, right? Like they almost, or we watch Soylent Green, because Soylent Green is supposed to take place in 2022. Mm. I've forgotten that in all year when I was, you know, I would look at my calendar for things I was going to do in it at the, on New Year's Eve, I don't know, I was back in August or something, I noticed on New Year's Eve calendar, it said, what is the secret of Soylent Green? Because the trailers for Soylent
calendar,
the trailers for Soylent Green, if you look up on YouTube a trailer for Soylent Green, that's what's in the trailer. What is the secret of Soylent Green? And so my calendar, the New Year's Eve said that, which Abby had to have put that in there, because I didn't put it in there. And I always forgot to ask her, why did you put this in the calendar?
The ghost of Charlton Heston.
But it was because she remembered that it was, that 2022 was the Soylent Green year or whatever. So she had it in her head that we'd watch Soylent Green, Planet of the Apes, and Omega Man, because
Electric Boogaloo and Soylent Green 3, Rise of the Blues.
No, all of those post-apocalyptic Charlton Heston movies.
Soylent Green 4, The Next Generation.
But I don't like Charlton Heston movies. I mean, I've watched Soylent Green a couple times because it's Soylent Green, but I mean, I don't really like Charlton Heston as an actor. So
Soylent Green 5, A New Beginning, or The Final Chapter. Soylent
Green
6, A New Beginning.
Did you ever see that sketch where a Saturday Night Live sketch, Phil Hartman?
Yes. That sticks in my head more than the film, which is sad.
Soylent Green still made of people.
And then Soylent Green 2, where they said they changed the recipe, but they didn't.
They said they were going to change the recipe, but they didn't.
and then there was Soylent White, where they did all their paperwork on copy paper that was called Soylent White, and it turned out that the paper was made of people. I don't think they were eating it that time. And then there was Soylent Cow Pies, which was the one where all they had to eat was cow pies, and then they found out the cow pies were actually made out of people, and they were really disgusted.
I don't remember that.
I believe John Goodman. Yeah, this was an interview with the creator of Soylent Green, played by John Goodman. And these were all the sequels he tried to do and never really hit again. Soylent Green, Soylent Green 2, Soylent White, and then Soylent Cow Pies.
But what did we do? I don't remember. Because we didn't watch, we didn't have any kind of theme to watch anything. I think there was some show that we were intending to watch that we binged, but it was, we ended up watching Wheel of Time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, it was okay, but it...
My sister and her family were really into it. I'm sure we'll watch it at some point here. It's on the list.
Well, the issue that we that I had with it was it's very, oh, darkness is coming and there's a chosen one. I mean, it's so tropey.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it's just tropes. I mean, you know what I'm seeing? You know what I mean? But in its defense, isn't it based on some material that
is kind
of older, right? Or not?
Yes. I mean, 90s.
It
was, I started reading it when it was the shit. Actually, when I thought it was going to be a trilogy, And in fact, I was in junior high or early high school when the third book came out, and I had to wait, put it on hold at the library because it was very popular. And it was, we thought it was supposed to be a trilogy. It was definitely not a trilogy. It kept going. I went to college with somebody who claimed to have won a contest and had lunch with the guy in which he said it was going to be an 8-book series. And me and all my friends read them, and they were huge. They were like 800 or 900 pages each. And it was one of those first books that had like a glossary in the back because it had so much mythology you couldn't keep track of. And it would, I would read them as soon as they came out, and they were like a year or two in between. And it got to where we'd be like, okay, there has to be this many books left, because we're like, they have to resolve this. They have to resolve this. They have to resolve this. And he put out another book, and me and my friends would be like, okay, now we need at least 4 more books, because he didn't resolve any of these, and he brought in this whole new thing. And then somewhere around the 8th book or so, I realized I couldn't remember everything, and the glossary had updated, so like the old stuff wasn't there. And I was like, I'm going to have to start over, and I'm sure as shit not starting over. And so I bailed. And then the series went on and on and on. And then the fucker died.
Yeah.
And it wasn't done, but he left notes. And so there was what I'm assuming was a competition in line with The Voice, where you sit with your chair backwards and you listen and then you can turn around. But in any event, there was some sort of elaborate, I'm sure televised competition to determine what author would finish the series. And the author's widow picked Brandon Sanderson, who is the hot shit right now too for very similar kinds of books. And after much discussion with the widow, they decided that this final book had too much in it and had to be its own trilogy. And it was, and then it was done. But yeah, these books are old enough and influential enough and classic enough that, yeah, they were trope filled at the time they were written. They also did a lot of things that in the following decades have become tropes.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit not their fault, because some of the tropes you're seeing, they kind of invented, or at least
made that's popular. What I'm getting. That's
but even getting back at. In those days, they had a lot of the classic fantasy novel stuff in there that you've seen many times before.
Although it seems to me that, I mean, tropes aren't bad. I mean, a lot of times a trope is just, you're writing in that genre, so you're going to have those tropes, and that's fine.
Yes.
The people reading it expect and even want those tropes. What they're getting from you that's fresh and different is how you're writing about it, what the characters are like, what the setting's like, and things like that. The problem is when you translate that into a visual medium like film or television, a lot of that cool literary stuff gets stripped out, and all you're left with is the tropes, and you're wondering, why did we need this?
And it is interesting because Robert Jordan is one of the first people that made me one of the first people that made me realize if you were good enough at wordsmithery, your storytelling didn't have to be as good. And I remember sections of the story being really boring to me, but he wrote it so well that I was really into it. It'll be interesting because I have a very love-hate memory of the books, but I also don't remember most of what was in the books. And I also don't know how accurate the show is to the books. So it should all be chaotic enough that I'll do fine. But
we also watched The Witcher. So that might've been what we did for New Year's. And I just don't remember which one of those things we did.
We are finally caught up on The Witcher. I'm looking a little more into what changed from the books and the video games and the TV show, because a lot of things did not go the way I thought they would go.
I've heard that some people aren't happy with, I thought it was fine. I thought the season was fine. I kind of liked it first one, but I've heard a lot of people don't like it.
I think I like the second season better. And yeah, I think it's mostly just for the overarching nature of it, not having to be as episodic, which was nice. I definitely have issues with it. The thing that's coming up a lot for people is character X in the TV show was very different from character X in either the books or the video games, which may not always match up there. And I like that version better. Therefore, this version is bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I get that because there are several characters in the show that I prefer the version I know from the video games. Mm. But I also think in some cases they were not very good characters. Mm. I was very unimpressed with Triss Marigold this season. And not just because she's drastically different from the Triss Marigold I know. That's fine. But just she was a little dumber and a little less assertive than the Triss I know, and I don't like that. And their whole version of Yen this season felt, it just didn't feel like Yen, and that felt very weird to me. But overall, yeah, it was nice. I mean, I'll keep watching. I'll definitely keep watching.
I thought Yennefer's ethical and moral conflicts were interesting, I thought. But
yeah, they just didn't match the character that, like, the character we saw at the end of season one it didn't work for me. And again, Yennefer from season one and Yennefer from Witcher 3, which are the two places I know Yennefer from, are very similar. And Yennefer from Witcher 3 is, in theory, Yennefer much older.
Okay.
Witcher 3 takes place after all of these books and series all grown up and shit like that. A lot of it is them talking about adventures they had in the past, which is funny to see them actually show up occasionally in this. And those Yennefers sort of agree with each other. So this was just a weird season where I'm like, I don't know who this person is. But overall, no, I did enjoy it. I fucking hate the world of The Witcher. It's such a bogged down, medieval, tropey, misogynist, patriarchy kind of place. And I fucking hate it. I would hate to live in that world. But they build it so well that it's really fascinating to me. And so I keep watching. But yeah, the more they get into geopolitics, the more I hate it because it highlights how shitty everything is. And it always involves a lot of people being especially shitty while they're doing political machinations.
Yeah, right. And
so I'm like, but I did enjoy it. And yeah, now we're doing Hawkeye and we're still doing Owl House. We do Owl House very slowly. And Ted Lasso.
It seems like people really want that Game of Thrones formula. I mean, you know, they really, and I don't blame them. I mean, Game of Thrones, when you look at its ratings just kept going up and up and up every, not just every season, but every show. It was it was weird how that worked out. And people just think, yeah, we need a show like that. We need a show that is going to give us those kind of returns. And so they're looking for the formula. And of course, the first thing they think is it's got to be medieval-y or magic-y.
Yes. You want fantastical stuff so you can have cool costumes and cool effects. Also want enough sensationalism so you can have a lot of boobs and a lot of blood. You will cut that down each season as it goes on, but by then you have your listeners hooked. Or sorry, your viewers hooked. And then the third thing you need is something that convinces people they are being clever while watching your show.
Right. Which usually involves some kind of political intrigue and
or stuff like that. If you go classic, involves a murder in a small town where only a local retiree can solve it. I'm saying this is not a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
This is just the newest version of it. And now they're like, oh, we can do it with politics. We just have to not get too involved. We have to make very clear who is on what side. Everybody has to be in bright colors so we know who the good guys are and the bad guys. And then we can have political discourse about
it. I mean, it does sort of interest me how, I mean, one of the reasons I think Game of Thrones worked is because the author did borrow a lot from the War of the Roses and stuff like that. You know, there was a depth and authenticity about it that came from the fact that he wasn't just pulling it completely out of the air. And so I think when writers do that, I was talking to Dave Avid about this recently because he was asking what I thought of the Foundation, a TV show, which we did watch.
You mean he wasn't writing in the hat and asking the hat what you thought of the TV show Foundation?
Well, he probably knew I wasn't talking about it because I didn't want to give away spoilers on the podcast, which was just correct. But what I discussed with him was, you know, Isaac Asimov wrote a history book this thick, a history of the world book. I mean, he was into history. And when the events in the Foundation and Empire books weren't just flights of fancy that he had, they were based on the things he knew about how empires rise and fall. I mean, he thought there was a pattern to how empires work, and he imagined that that pattern could be quantified, like literally quantified in the future when a mathematician has a large enough sample the size of a galaxy. But he, Isaac Asimov, didn't have a sample that big, so he could only do a qualitative analysis. He could only do a qualitative analysis, but it was a very clever analysis, and that's what was happening in the Empire and Foundation books, was his qualitative analysis of empires rising and falling. And it's very interesting. And, you know, when people put that in a story, I think it does help even the casual viewer appreciate it more because it seems authentic. They can sense that there's an authenticity and a depth to it that maybe they don't know about, you know, because they're not students of history, but something about the presentation feels real.
And I'm still on the fence about whether or not it has to be historical. I think if the author has enough of a living world in their head, it comes through. I think part of the appeal of the Lord of the Rings, and for the record, I'm not a big fan of Lord of the Rings, have technically never made it through Fellowship and have listened only to the radio play and watched the various movies. So I cannot deny its significance or its popularity. And I think the Lord of the Rings was in large part so popular because everything from the Silmarillion, much of which had not been written down yet, that was in Tolkien's head. He had a breadth of crazy history and worldview such that you could just ask him something like, what would happen in this circumstance in your world? And he would know right away. And I think that's true of a lot of, I think that's what makes people love stuff like that. I think that's what makes people love Harry Potter, is there's just so much detail that there's something going on in J.K. Rowling's head where that world really exists. And to a degree, I think that's a thing with Lucas, although sometimes I think Lucas maybe just made it look that way. But
no, I think you're right. I think the people that draw on history are just sort of taking a shortcut to that.
They've already got it built in. They don't have to hold it all in their head.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I think you're right about that. That's interesting. That's interesting.
All right. You want to read a question?
I'm sorry. Are you done talking about your week or?
Yeah, I don't have much going on.
I mean, didn't you do something for New Year's and all that?
Yeah, we got together. We hung out. I didn't drink too much. It was a pretty small crowd. We played some games. We watched Hackers. And I hadn't realized almost no one in the room had ever watched it except me.
Huh.
I assumed we all had seen it and we're watching it again. No.
But did anything insightful happen from the subsequent viewing?
It is a little bit. Oh. Because it is famously a movie about hackers with bad hacking in it. But it has some very bad hacking. I would still say it probably has some of the most realistic hacking in a hacking movie from the 20th century. Because what it did was it took a lot of things that actually happened in early hacker culture and then just blew them up really big and ridiculous. So like early on, you get somebody fucking social engineering a security guard to read him the numbers off the back of the modem by pretending to be somebody from IT and things like that. but it has a lot of, you know, how fast can you type is how fast you can hack. And it has a lot of, you know, it likes to play with the whole, oh, it's the New York skyline. Oh, no, wait, it's data towers in a computer server, that kind of shit. So many babies in this movie. Little baby Johnny Lee Miller, although 1 year away from making Trainspotting. Little baby Angelina Jolie, I think 1 year away from making Gia. Little baby Wendell Pierce, FBI agent. That one's just weird because it's honestly Wendell Pierce young enough that he's not really Wendell Pierce yet. And that just feels weird. Penn Jillette as absolutely no one. He plays this little tiny part that clearly was back before anybody knew that who the fuck Penn Jillette was. And Fisher Stevens as the bad guy. People toss around the term edgelord nowadays. I think it exclusively means attempting to look and or act like Fisher Stevens' character from the movie Hackers.
Okay.
He's got the slicked back mullet and all sorts of black and like long coats and things like that. And the very, very thin beard and mustache. It's pretty funny. But yeah, a lot of the hacking, I mean, compared to other shit later. And I mean, this is the thing. Best hacking movie of all time, Sneakers. And Sneakers has the worst hacking you've ever heard of. Sneakers does not understand what computers are, even remotely. Still an absolutely incredible movie. Highly recommend it. But it made me realize also this was, I think the movie Hackers was one of the things to really launch that aesthetic as fashion. Like it started making it a big thing because the costumes were very carefully chosen in this movie. Also, everybody rollerblades everywhere all the time. It's kind of amazing. They rollerblade all the time, except Fisher Stevens, a bad guy who skateboards, like in the office building. He skateboards to meetings and stuff while wearing his long coat and all that. It's something.
Hackers, Sneakers, and what would be a good third movie to see in that set?
Hackers, Sneakers, and Lady Killers. No. the only real other movie I can think of that's about hacking is The Net. And that thing sucks. That thing sucks bad. But Sneakers is mostly just the fucking cast. Everyone is in Sneakers. Robert Redford is in Sneakers. Dan Aykroyd is in Sneakers. River Phoenix, one of his last performances, I believe, in Sneakers. The Lion King's dad, James Earl Jones, is in Sneakers. Who else is in Sneakers? There's a bunch of people.
Isn't it Annette Bening?
I think Annette Bening is in Sneakers. Yeah, there's a lot of people in Sneakers.
The blind guy. I always forget what that actor's name is, but he's been in tons of things.
I haven't seen Sneakers in too long. I need to see Sneakers again.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I saw it, it really held up. Now, I haven't, maybe I should see.
Again, the nature of the hacking and breaking security does not hold up in the slightest.
Well,
they don't understand how computers or technology work at all. That is not why you watch this movie.
But if you kind of keep it in the time frame that it's set, you can forgive all that. At least I can.
I mean,
and it's fine.
Yes, it was a time where people just genuinely didn't know this stuff. It's old enough that when I saw it, I didn't see it in the theaters, and I didn't realize how bad the hacking was at the time. And it was only years later that I'm like, what the fuck? None of this makes any sense at all.
Oh, yeah, Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day's in it.
Oh, Ned Ryerson! I just remember that Dan Aykroyd's in it playing
Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd in everything where he gets to be a scientist, basically.
And a conspiracy and
named
theorist.
Mother.
Yeah.
And that was just on the cusp where, like, that seems weird, but you're also like, no, people, old people, did, like hippies, that's a thing they would say. Oh, yeah. Hackers also has a real baby Matthew Lillard in it, playing kind of just his character from Scream, which I found interesting. There's a lot of interesting androgynous fashion look, which I'm used to when I think of 80s and 90s females dressing androgynously, but a lot of men dressing androgynously in this, and I found that interesting.
Well, there was There was a period of time in cyberpunk fashion where that was a thing.
Yeah.
And being androgyny was a thing. I don't think that's true now. Like, if you looked up cyberpunk fashion now, I don't think that's true. But
nobody late does 90s cyberpunk now. They just do steampunk. Just glue some gears on it.
Well, there was a period of time where, like, cyberpunk fashion actually kind of wanted to, or it seemed to be interested in the whole, you know, what makes it cyberpunk. And one of the things was the anonymity, or not being able to tell, not just the androgyny, but it, like, a lot of the stuff would cover the face. There'd be masks. So the same anonymity you had in the cyber world, you would maintain in the outside world, including androgyny, which I thought was actually kind of an interesting aspect of cyberpunk fashion for that period of time. But I think that ended after, like, I think that was going on in the late 90s, early 2000s. And by the 2010s, I think they weren't doing that anymore. I don't know.
I was just talking the other night. So there's a game called Shadowrun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty cool game. It's basically cyberpunk, like near future, everything's gone all cyberpunk dystopia, but also with a little magic thrown in. So, like, there was a little bit of a magical apocalypse that happened, and so now, in addition to all the cyberpunk shit, like, you have people who can do magic and people who are mutated into looking like elves and dwarves and things like that, but it's still set in that sort of cyberpunk future. And as with all these things, it has its version of the net, the matrix, the whatever. And this has been around since the 80s, and this is not a new thing. All the things had it. But the game has continued all this time. And it became an issue because their version of the Matrix or whatever was way lower tech than our current level of technology.
Okay.
So what they did was they had in-game in their materials, they staged a world event where basically the entire internet crashed and, like, the world was almost destroyed.
Mm.
And then they had to rebuild a new one. And the new one took advantage of things like wireless signals and Bluetooth and stuff like this. So in the future, they had to stage an apocalypse so they could rebuild to match the present in a further, and that was fourth edition. Suddenly we had this instead.
Okay, that's interesting.
That always cracked me up. Like, yeah, the future needs to catch up with the present, so we're gonna have this big leap here.
The future needs to catch up with the
present. You're not matching. What did I watch? I watched something recently that messed with time travel and I was angry again. I can't remember. It happens a lot. Seriously, I'm getting real close to wanting to dominate the world just so I can control what and how stories are told involving time travel. It's ridiculous.
You really seem concerned about that.
I really am.
Yeah.
Time travel is one of the coolest narrative devices ever, and almost no one uses it correctly. I freely admit, I don't use it because I'm not sure I could use it correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
but there needs to be a governing body.
Oh,
Also, the more I think on it, so I run everything. Like I have a totalitarian regime, and this is the only shit I care about. So you
time
can
travel
so,
narratives, right?
So unprecedented freedom in my empire, except for this. And I'm imagining like little urchins on the street corner talking a story, and then the guards hear him and said something about 3 years ago. What? No, you're going to jail. It's like, no, it was just a flashback. I was just telling. No, I heard 3 years ago. You're going to jail. You're getting killed. Because it will rise up. Like, if anything, me clamping down, if I have learned anything from stories, me clamping down on this will create an underground resurgence of time travel stories, punishable by death, but that will make them all the more appealing. I love this. Now, if we tweak it just slightly, and I do this not because of time travel stories, but because of totalitarian dystopia stories, we've become so referential, self-referential, I think we just turned it into a Kids in the Hall sketch.
Or the fourth Matrix movie.
Oh, at New Year's, somebody who really liked the movie was trying to argue against some of the naysaying that happened.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. The problem is, this is a friend of mine who is not good at forming an argument. And I was very interested in this. So I kept asking more questions. And I think the whole thing just came off very frustrating. And like, I was like picking on them, but I was like, no, I want to know what this is. And it is a problem that I have with this friend in general, because your ability to form a convincing argument has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not you're correct.
Right. That's right.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Right.
And so I have difficulty with this, but it mostly seemed to come from why they think Lily Wachowski made it, which I'm pretty big death of the author myself. So I don't really follow, but I don't know. They seem to think that despite that, that somehow, not that you couldn't call this a bad movie, but certain people couldn't call it a bad movie for whatever reason they were calling it bad. I don't know. It sounds pretty bad to me. But it and Ghostbusters are helping me learn. They don't have to stop making these things. They're just not for me, and I can stop watching them, and it's fine.
Right.
I'm so old and tired. That's got to be real weird on people who just listen to the audio, because they just hear me say, I'm so old and tired, and then very slowly you having a laughing fit. Like, they don't see me doing the little lip sticking out or anything. So you just come off like an asshole.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's always been the case. Like, I mean,
I'm just so old and tired. I was like, ah! You're so old and tired. All right, everybody, we're not getting to some questions, clearly.
I'm 8 years older than you, so I mean, I can, and I'm entitled to laugh.
12 years older in our hearts. I don't know what that means. Here's what I want you to do, people. This is going to make your life a little bit better there. You're going to go to YouTube and you're going to type in Mr. Swallow. You can type it MR space Swallow, and you'll see Mr. Swallow. I promise you this is not a trick. I know that kind of name could come off as some sort of double entendre. I promise you this is not a thing. It is a funny thing to see involving Nick Mohammed, the actor who plays Nate in Ted Lasso. This is a bit he used to do, and sometimes I just watch them and it cracks me up. And you in particular, William, I think would enjoy them, because when I watch them, I remember moments when I have acted exactly like he is acting, and you are usually on the floor laughing. So I think Mr. Swallow might tap into something you find amusing in me, therefore.
Oh, okay.
Although I might be giving myself way too much credit there, but you should check it out. So,
all right, sure.
The rest of you, I hope this year is going well for you. Maybe you're not as old and as tired as me. I'm sorry we didn't get in any questions. Some more of you have written in. I appreciate that. We always want more. We always need more, even though I know we get lazy like this, but sometimes you got to talk about Boba Fett. So, God, jeez. Give us a minute. Shut up. We're talking about Boba Fett. God.
The Boba Fett minute.
Well, get to your questions. First, we want to talk about Boba Fett. Get out of my room. We're trying to record a podcast.
Shut up, Mom.
Shut up. No, I don't need any more Diet Dr. Peppers. We're fine. Shut up. All right, this has gone off the rails. Where are the Cheetos? All right, listen again next week, people. I can't say it'll be better. Probably won't be worse. Probably.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.